We do begin this hour with breaking news. Right now, Israel trying to determine if its forces have indeed killed the leader of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar. Two Israeli sources telling CNN that forces engaged three militants near a building in Gaza and killed all three. The troops then found the man resembling Sinwar and alerted senior commanders. Sources telling CNN that DNA testing is underway at this point. If confirmed, Sinwar's death would have massive implications on the region. The Israel-Hamas war, of course, and the hostages still being held.
Well, that is one Jim Acosta on CNN talking about the death of the Hamas terror chief leader Sinwar, and he has been confirmed to have been killed. As you heard Jim Acosta saying, this will have great implications on the situation in the Middle East. So we wanted to work in a great expert, our friend Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, to talk about what this actually means for that region and for our role in the United States of America in trying to exact some peace there. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being here.
It is always a pleasure, a blessing to be with you. Thanks for having me on, Annie.
Thank you so much. When you heard about this news of Sinwar's death and the confirmation of it, what does that mean to you and to our role in the Middle East?
Well, for America, it would be like getting bin Laden. So the mastermind of a terrorist attack, killing so many people, and then you finally get your guy. So there's a euphoria, an excitement about that, and a sense of vengeance or justice being served. But the second part of that, what are the implications? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. So does it cause Hamas to kill all the remaining hostages? Does it cause them to pause and then to release them because, the mastermind is gone and people want kind of cooler heads? And we don't know the outcome to that. So for the U.S. government, U.S. military forces in the region, and certainly for the Israelis, it's kind of a stress-filled waiting game where they have to be ready for anything, not knowing when that anything might occur.
Yeah, there are a lot of directions that this could head after his death. And of course, those reactions will cause further reactions in the region. I want to know from you, to take this back a little bit, he is the architect of the October 7th attack a little bit over a year ago of today. Do you think that the United States and also the world understands the gravity of what took place in Israel on October 7th? Do you think we've understood completely what happened?
No. I think it's a simple question. Our answer, right, at least in my mind, only Israel knows what it's like to be bombarded on a daily basis for the last year and on a fairly regular basis for the last 10 or 15 years. So all of these capitals in London and, in Canada and Germany and Poland and the United States calling for a two-state solution or a peaceful resolution, they are not countries that have been under assault like this for such a long period of time. And so if any one of these major cities was also under rocket and missile attack, suicide bombers, all the things that we have seen in the news, they would more properly understand where Netanyahu is at and where the national security establishment in Israel is at, that they have to stamp out entities like Hamas and Hezbollah, and they have to so bloody Iran that these entities decide to refute themselves or to step away from their objective of the elimination of the state of Israel. So I think that the West still doesn't understand the gravity of October 7th or what it's like to live in Israel when you're surrounded by enemies that want to see you disappear.
When we hear people refer to Israel as the little Satan and potentially the United States as the great Satan, is the United States involvement in this conflict, when we hear about Hamas hating Israel and, of course, hating America, is their hatred for America just simply because we support Israel? Is it separate? Is it its own entity that exists on its own, a hatred for our culture, for our Western existence in the United States of America? Or do all avenues go through the existence of Israel?
Well, I think it's a combination of the two. I think the more direct hatred is because of the linkage to Israel. So, these politicized, hyper-violent Islamists it's not all of Islam. I mean, you don't hear the same kind of threats out of Indonesia or other countries. So, but this strain of Islam so detests Israel and Jews in particular that U.S. support extends that hatred to the United States. But if we think back to September 11, 2001, America was an iconic representation of Western ideology, Christianity, philosophy, economic system. So Osama bin Laden saw a great strike at the United States as a representation of strike against the West. So there is a larger context or story where this hatred of America is more broad and more generalized.
We're speaking with retired Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood here on the Annie Fry Show. So when we talk about Hamas and we talk about the attacks on October 7th to Israel, it often leads back to Iran and the understanding that Iran has an interest in funding these terrorist organizations that attack Israel, that hate America. Does Iran have a reaction? We just saw them, you know, bombing Israel a week or two ago. Does Iran have a compulsion now to respond to this death of Sinwar?
Not to respond, but I think they'll double down on their own defensive thinking. So they're going to be very guarded against an emboldened or more animated Israel, that Israel has been extremely sophisticated and effective at sequentially eliminating the political and military leadership of Hamas, of Hezbollah, even Iranian officials with the Quds Force and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. So it's like, wow, who can stand against Israel and their intelligence service? You know, remember the pager attack and walkie-talkies and all this stuff. So we've had the bad guys in this story ineffective. Israel has been wildly effective. So now that they've taken out the military leader of Hamas, who is next on that chain?
It's been quite something to watch, almost theatrical, in the way that Israel has been able to surgically go after the people who they have deemed to be their enemies. And you've seen a very much so like an Israel first. They're going to do what they need to protect themselves. And they know that across the world, geopolitically, with their allies across the world who might be publicly saying, ceasefire, as you've seen the president of the United States talking about the ceasefire, people who are trying to become the president of the United States, Kamala Harris, talking about a ceasefire. And in the midst of all of that, Israel has continued to go down the path of doing what they need to do in order to protect themselves. Is this bold for Israel to do this? Or do you feel like this is what Israel has always had it in them to protect themselves this way, regardless of the political pressures from around the world?
Yeah, it's a survival instinct or reality in Israel. So nobody else has really stepped up to provide them military forces in an offensive way. It's been great defensive support. Here are some more missiles that you can use on your own in your air defense systems, or selling ammunition or weaponry. So it's been the ingenuity of the Israelis that will take a Western product and actually make it better and more effective. And because it's the only Jewish majority country in the world. There are 50 Muslim majority countries in the world. Where else do Israelis have to go but the state of Israel? And they've been under attack, six major wars since the founding of the state of Israel. And the Jews as a people have been subject for abuse over centuries. So I think it's embedded in the societal DNA of Israelis to do what they have to do to survive and to make their way in the world. And I think the really incredible story is they have done that with representative government, with a capitalist economic system, with an amazingly advanced education and manufacturing sector. I mean, you don't see that replicated anywhere else in the world.
Yes, and a diverse people among them. There are Muslim people who are in Israel, and I think the people don't always know the crossover there. How do you characterize the relationship right now between the United States and Israel?
Complicated. On the one hand, we're going to send one of seven THAAD, very sophisticated air defense, missile defense systems to Israel. And yet there was this letter from the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense that said, if you don't increase humanitarian support, we might cut off support, monetary support to purchase more munitions. So how do you give them weaponry and then threaten the removal of that weaponry unless they behave in a certain way? We did get a concession out of Netanyahu, who said that his reprisal against Iran in the wake of the 200 ballistic missile attack several weeks ago, that he won't strike their nuclear complex, and he probably won't strike their energy production capabilities, limiting the strikes against military targets. And yet, it's another risk that Israel is taking, because why else would Iran have the nuclear program it has unless it is searching for a nuclear weapon? And Israel can just imagine the horror story of its arch enemy, Iran, with nuclear capabilities. So this relationship between the U.S. and Israel is in the context of our own domestic political environment. Nobody wants to get involved in another major war in the Middle East, but this timidity and this conditional support by the United States might get us there anyway.
Ugh. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with us. Last question before we let you go. With the death of the Hamas chief Yahya Sinwar today, you referred to it as euphoric for Israel because this is such a personal accomplishment for Israel in the tragic occurrences of what took place on October 7th. Does somebody else just fill Sinwar's shoes and step in and then things kind of carry on the way they were before? Or is this a dramatic change in the course of events?
I think somebody else will fill in the shoes, just like there was another leader of Al-Qaeda, that rose to replace bin Laden. Probably not as effective. It will generate a lot of debate within Hamas between those who have to keep the fight going, we have to avenge the death of our leader, and others saying, holy cow, we've lost so many people, there's so much blood spilled. Well, what do we do with the 100-some-odd hostages that we still have? Are they still bargaining chips? Or do we buy off Israel by releasing them? So those debates aren't known to the outside. You don't know how they'll resolve. But at least in the interim, you will see political and military replacements there in Hamas, just as you have seen replacements kind of step up on Hezbollah. Mm.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, thank you for your time today. We really appreciate it. Big news story that developed right before the show. So we appreciate you working us into your schedule this afternoon.
Blessings to you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much as well. God blessings to you. Good to have the Lieutenant Colonel on to talk about this. Big news. I think it's important to understand the relationship. You remember where you were when Osama bin Laden was announced to have been killed? I remember where I was. I was sitting at the Pinnacle table, and it was a big news story. And it was something that gave a bit of a finality to a very, very difficult decade, I think it was, near decade, by the time Osama bin Laden was finally killed. So Yahya Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, killed today by Israel. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Brandon Strock's going to be with us. I'm excited to bring him back on. He is the founder of the Walk Away movement and has quite a story to tell, of course. But he has his clear eyes on what the left is trying to do in our country, specifically with this election, specifically with their candidate. So we'll speak to Brandon Strock when we come back. And I want to remind you, tonight there is a Sip and Shop event at the Diamond Shop. If you go to thediamondshop.net, you will be able to see the details of their Sip and Shop event. But they have a special engagement ring sale. I believe it's 30% off engagement rings and $100 toward the future wedding band purchase that you might be making as well as that engagement ring purchase. So put it on your calendar tonight from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Diamond Shop. The amazing people there offering a great, great deal on engagement rings. And you're not going to want to miss it. 5:30 to 7:30 tonight in Clayton, Missouri at the Diamond Shop. Brandon Strock on the Annie Fry Show next.
This is how freedom fell. Our world ended. And things never got better. Oh, tyrants took it all away. And now tyranny is here to stay.
Well, that sounds absolutely bleak, but maybe something that a lot of us are looking to the future and going, what is at stake in this upcoming election? And what are the people in the far left who have really gotten a grasp over the Democratic Party? What are they trying to do? What is the end game here? Well, we bring our friend Brandon Strzok onto the show with us, the founder of the Walk Away Movement and the feature of this this great video that you can see on his Twitter timeline. I'm going to tweet it out on mine. At Annie Fry Show as well. Brandon, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here with us today.
Always good to be here with you.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Tell us about this video that's about, I mean, the subject of it is tyranny. That's a big word, and it's one that I think we're a little closer to now than maybe we have been in our lifetimes.
Yeah. Well, so basically, Walkaway Campaign, we just put out this 5-minute, kind of like a little 5-minute short film. And it's a little bit concept-y, I'll tell you that. But it's essentially kind of what it is almost like the backstory, I guess I would say, is that a future civilization sort of finds this educational, it's an educational video in the style of a 1950s educational film, teaching a future civilization how America as we know it today fell. So it's in kind of a dystopian future. America has fallen because the Democrats were reelected in the 2024 election. And basically, the communist plan to destroy America ends up being successful. And so in this film, which is 5 minutes long, there's 4 steps that we talk about how tyrants destroy free nations. And we kind of go through it. But again, it's kind of in this old timey black and white 1950s educational film. Mm-hmm. But we use some really kind of cool modern imagery of, different, whether it's people in the media, social media, tech giants, Democrat Party, politicians, all different kind of people who contributed to the impending downfall of America. And yeah. I know basically we just tried to do something that was kind of visually and interesting and cool to show people what can happen if we don't get it right in the next month.
Yeah, I think listening to the weird thing about the Kamala Harris part of this whole process is not that she's so radically far left that what she is proposing to the American people is like so scary that you'd want to vote against it. It's that she's not even being pressed to tell us what she stands for. We got to see Bret Baier interview her in a shortened interview because they showed up 17 minutes late and then were apparently like trying to land the plane saying end the interview at the end. And so he didn't get the full 30 minutes he was originally promised. But that was one of the first times I've seen anyone not let her just spew talking points and then move on to the next subject. She doesn't even have to tell the American people what she would do with the power that she would be afforded should be elected the president of the United States. And all we're supposed to know about Donald Trump is orange man, bad, scary dude. Don't let him get into office. Like the lack of substance here is actually what becomes the most frightening to me.
Well, 100%. And she doesn't it doesn't even have to be about her. I mean, all it has to be about, look at Biden. Like literally, this is a man who at this point is he's not even really aware of where he is or what he's doing, which is another reason why he became a perfect candidate, I think, for the people who are actually pulling the strings. But it's about putting some sort of complicit figurehead into that position who is controllable. And Kamala Harris is very controllable because she's not very knowledgeable. And Biden was very controllable because, first of all, I think he's morally compromised. But second of all, he's also cognitively compromised. And that made him a very malleable, controllable figure. Part of the process of getting us to where we are today is, is convincing the populace that the alternative, which is to say Donald Trump, is absolutely unacceptable, absolutely not a viable alternative. So if you convince people that it's a question of voting for Hitler or voting for anybody else, most people who believe that that's the scenario are going to say, well, anything is better than Hitler.
Right.
So yeah, she's not great. She's stupid. She's unprepared. She's whatever, but she's not Hitler. So we're going to vote for her. And then once they vote for her, and if enough people vote for her, or if enough votes are tabulated in her favor, then she's controlled by whomever is really pulling the strings.
Yeah, it's completely true. We're speaking with Brandon Strock, who's the founder of the Walk Away Movement, which I think is really important to highlight here, Brandon, because you were doing this before. There is a movement out there right now that is following in your footsteps. You were a very passionate voter, very heartbroken when Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, and you've told your story, and so many people have seen your story, and I bet you there's so many people who aren't even willing to publicly admit that your story is their story right now. But you've made it okay for people to say, this Democrat Party is either A, not what I thought it was, or B, they've left me and they're not for me anymore, and people are walking away. Why do you think that that's really kind of picked up some momentum maybe in the last 6 months, year or so, of what we've seen from the Democrats who do have power right now? Kamala Harris is in office in right now in an administration.
Well, because first of all, thank you for bringing that up, because it's something I've been talking about a lot recently. You know, people are asking me, what do you see in the last, you know, 6 months or the last year in terms of shift and momentum within the Walkaway movement? And the first and most notable thing, I think, is the number of high profile people who are now publicly talking about walking away. And second of all, the number of people in public office, from all the way from local state legislatures, and local offices, all the way up to the federal government. I mean, if you look around California, state Senate Gloria Romero, she very publicly walked away. Texas Congressperson Sean Thierry, Georgia State Rep Misha Maynor, all the way up to RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, and so many other people are very publicly walking away. And so my answer to why is this happening so much now is that I truly believe, and pat ourselves on the back.
Oh,
too
no,
much,
pat but, away. You deserve
well, I'm
it.
Going to.
You deserve I, it. I'm, yeah.
I'm going to, because what I believe happened is that 6.5 years ago, when I started Walkaway, well, first of all, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, the heart and soul of Walkaway, what we do is our testimonial campaign. I launched a video 6.5 years ago talking about all the reasons I was walking away, and created a social media group encouraging other people to join, share their stories. And over 2.5 years, we grew to 500,000 people and literally tens of thousands of videos and written testimonials of people talking about why they're walking away from the Democrat Party. And so I believe what Walkaway has done is created an atmosphere where it's now not only safe and supported and kind of normalized to share your story about walking away, but I would actually argue it's become kind of cool.
Yeah.
To say, hey, I'm leaving the party. I'm not doing this anymore. I mean, 6.5 years ago, when I told my walkaway story, I was brutalized. Brutalized for what I did. And I mean, to be honest with you, I continue to be brutalized. I've in the last 4 years, I've been raided by the federal government. I was put in jail. I was falsely accused of crimes I didn't commit. They used those false accusations to ban me on social media, ban me from banks, payment processors. I can't even list all the ways that my life has been turned upside down. But they did that to me for being kind of a front runner in this movement of encouraging people to speak up and be public about leaving the Democratic Party. Now everybody's doing it, and that's great. Like, it's worth it to me to have gone through what I went through if we're now at a point where it's becoming almost normal for people to say, I'm done with this party.
Yeah.
And not have to suffer the same consequences I did.
Completely. And, you know, I think that usually what's trendy is usually what's counterculture. And you were counterculture. You were one of the initial people to be able to go out and say that you were for Hillary. You were brokenhearted when she lost the race. You've referred to yourself in your community as a gay man about having to walk away from the culture that exists around it and to really invest in yourself by saying, no, the Democrat Party isn't for me. And to even there's one thing to like walk away from the Democrat Party, but it's another thing to walk into the Republican Party as it looks right now, because there is a little bit of a purgatory that exists in between. You can call yourself libertarian or independent or whatever. Donald Trump has come on the scene and really reformed what the Republican Party looks like so much that the Liz Cheney's, Adam Kinzinger's of the world, several people who were really shoved into Donald Trump's early administration by the bureaucracy, they've all said that the Republican Party isn't for them. And I'm like, what an awesome swap for the Republicans. The people who we are purging and the people who we are annexing, win-win for the people on the right side of the aisle. And you were very much so one of the leaders of that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I think certainly I can't underestimate the impact that Donald Trump... I really truly believe that if Hillary Clinton had won the 2016 election, that I would still be a liberal. I think I would still be a Democrat. And I would still be believing every lie the left-wing media tells. It's hard to even imagine, you know, where we would be today if that had been the scenario. But, you know, Donald Trump's election caused such a disruption and an upset in my life personally, not to mention the lives of, you know, tens of millions of people in this country, many of whom are still believing what the left-wing media is saying. But it was that disruption that got me asking questions and got me investigating and searching for answers. And that investigation is what showed me. I mean, it was like the greatest murder mystery of all time, you know, because it was like, you know, reading a murder mystery and discovering at the end that you're the killer. Like, oh, my God. You know, because I was just like, oh, my God, it's not the problem is me. The yeah. problem is. What I was believing, what I was listening to, and you know, so yeah, I can't overestimate enough the impact that Donald Trump I think mm-hmm. had on me waking up and walking away, and that began the catalyst of me creating this movement, and then and the impact that it's had on so many people, because the one commonality in almost every walkaway story is a feeling of betrayal. Ugh. No matter what it was exactly, the specific incident that led people to have their eyes open. The common thread in every walkaway story is that there's a realization we've been lied to and betrayed. And that was usually by the Democrats or the media or, you know, someone on the left or something on the left that suddenly a light went on. It was like, I've been betrayed.
Brandon Strzok with us right now. Before we let you go, I'm wondering, I don't want to count my chickens. The polls look like they favor Donald Trump, but like you said, I think you said it like, we'll wait to see how the votes are tabulated. I think you very carefully said earlier. If you have a Donald Trump 2016 victory and then a Joe Biden 2020 victory, and then people get to immediately see, I mean, there's going to be a dramatic difference should he win this election. People are going to quickly see the difference in a way that in my lifetime, I was born in 1984, in my lifetime, I haven't seen, back-to-back contrast in such a different way of governing between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, that should Donald Trump win this next election, you know, the push that people might need to walk away from the Democrat Party to see, like, you know what, maybe it is the party, just like you said, maybe I have been lied to have their eyes wide open, that a Donald Trump victory will really be able to allow the Republicans to just simply point to the scoreboard to say, see, we've been telling you, welcome to the good side, come on over, the water's fine.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, my personal journey was that I walked away from the Democratic Party and I became a Republican, a MAGA or America First Republican behind Donald Trump. I got to be honest with you. I'm not like the hugest fan of the Republican Party, although I am a registered Republican.
Where's your concerns? I think that's natural to leave one party and to come into another one and not be like, everything they say is fine.
Actually, I did kind of feel that way at first. I mean, I was super stoked to be a Republican for the first couple of years. But then I started to see what I feel like are just these massive shortcomings, we would probably need another 2 hours to get into all of it. But in a nutshell, I can tell you, I'm very bothered by the fact that the Republicans, I think, they're weak, they're impotent, they're, to a certain degree, disloyal. I can tell you that I spent 2.5 years traveling the country, going into college campuses, minority communities, the, you know, low income black neighborhoods, Hispanic neighborhoods, doing walkaway town halls, events, debates. I mean, we talked to thousands and thousands of people all over this country. And I would say doing the work that the Republican Party should have always been doing, yes. but didn't do, and still isn't doing. And then when I did what I did so well and so effectively, that the full might of the federal government under the Democrats decided to try to stomp me out and destroy my life, the Republican Party that I sacrificed myself for in service was kind of like, Brandon who? Brandon what? I don't know what you're talking about. You know, and that's egregious to me. I mean, that turns my stomach. So I have a real problem with that. And look, we just have to get through this election, but there needs to be some really honest conversations after this election about what this party stands for and if they stand for people and values for the people who are being effective activists and voices in their movement. We need to have a lot of conversations because, you know, I learned some crushingly difficult lessons in the last 3 years, and that can't be allowed to stand. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because you mentioned pointing to a scoreboard if Donald Trump wins. No, I am not going to stand behind a party that puffs out its chest and points at a scoreboard if we have a victory, because frankly, they didn't really do the work to. If Donald Trump wins, it will not be because of the work of the Republican Party. The Republican Party should count themselves lucky if Donald Trump wins, and they should not be boasting about a scoreboard because they didn't earn the points on that scoreboard.
The grassroots that have gotten the successes that we have seen so far and the ability to bring Donald Trump back onto the scene so that he can have the possibility of a second term, the grassroots are what is making this possible. And to your point, exactly, we've been saying this a lot. We're in St. Louis, Missouri. So we know, I live in Illinois across the river, blue state, Missouri, red state, but St. Louis, blue city. And we just see the just despair that exists all around us because of the Democrat policies that take place. And it's like, there is something good for Republicans to invest in time here to go and get people to participate in the system. And if the party doesn't want to do it, if the party doesn't want to, on a national level, make the effort, and grassroots do, and they actually do pull people into considering something different for the first time, they better get seats at the table for the new Republican Party that hopefully we will be ushering in November 5th of 2024, because you are exactly right. People like you, other people in the movement who have been very active and talking to those same areas that you have. I want to see you get your due in this, because I know that you have suffered at the hands of the success you've had. And that's why we want to keep having you on the show here, Brandon. We appreciate your voice. We want to make sure people still hear it.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah. And I mean, it's look, if we do see a victory next month, and I certainly hope that we do, you know, Walkaway had a huge part in that. Donald Trump's not going to be reelected without the help of, I'd say, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people who left the left and decided to come over to our tent and vote for him. And, you know, I think it's not about, you know, taking credit or patting someone on the back, but I think it's about acknowledging that's really hard work and it comes with a lot of sacrifices. And I think that when somebody does that work well and effectively to the point where they're brutally targeted by the other side, you know, we're supposed to be a unit, right? I mean, we're supposed to be an
army.
That's
how the left
right?
usually and, operates, for sure.
Yeah. And for a side of the aisle that, you know, cares so much about the military and things like that, it's like, well, let's not leave our men behind, right? Let's operate more as a unit and as a team and not turn our backs on each other when we're, you know, getting the hell kicked out of by ourselves by the left.
Yeah. I think you're spot on, and the Walkaway movement has been wonderful. I want to encourage people to go to your Twitter account, your X account, at Brandon Strug, and check out that video, because it's a unique way of telling a futuristic kind of story that we might be living in right now to make sure something like that never actually has to occur. And sometimes you see those things and you go, okay. Now I see where we're going with this. We got to stop it from happening. And tyranny is at our doorstep. We need to be sure that it does not enter in. Brandon, thank you for being with us today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Great to speak to you, too. And if I could say very quickly, too, I'd also, in addition to going to my ex, I'd encourage people to go to the Walkaway Campaign YouTube channel. Please subscribe to it. And you can also find the video there. Walkaway Campaign YouTube channel. Please subscribe.
We will be sure to share that on our socials as well. Sounds great, Brandon. Thank you so much. It's great to have you here.
You too. Thanks.
Brandon Strzok, the founder of Walkaway, has got quite a story, quite a journey from voting for Hillary Clinton in 2016, suffering that loss, and then walking walking away from the party, January 6th, and everything that they have done, that they did to him in the wake of that. And it's just, it's not something that you would wish on anybody. We always appreciate when he comes on with us. Quick break. When we come back, more on Arnie Fry Show, YouTube live chat poll. We want you to check out and vote in. Did Brett Baier conduct a fair interview? Yes or no? Join us on our Arnie Fry YouTube channel to vote in the live chat there. And go subscribe to the Walk Away Campaign YouTube while you're on the app. We'll be right back.
Hold on so nervously to me and my dream.
This is the...
I hope you had the time of your life.
I was just thinking about... This is like such an ending song, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to tell you you were fired.
Oh, that'd be great.
I don't even have the ability to fire you.
If you
obviously.
But just hey, when I do get fired...
I'll stand there and play this on the guitar.
That'd be great.
Outside of Steve's office.
Yeah.
Oh, they slow walk you out
yeah.
to the car and they're like, we need your card.
Yeah. And I just want, if you could, video it so that everybody knows that you did it.
Oh, we'll do it for the internet.
Yeah, please do. And then as I'm walking out, I just want you to like long shot down the hallway. Me at the very end of the hallway.
Me at one
fist
end?
In the air.
No, you
just
with
fist
the other?
In the air. Box in one arm, fist in the air in the other, freeze frame, kind of zoom in at the end.
Steve Spartan kicks you out the door.
You're not fired. You have to stay.
No.
Sorry.
Be a good video, though.
Yeah, it would. We could still do it.
I mean, there's the video would be great. Yeah,
we can do the video.
I mean,
you just got to come back the next day. We'll do it at the end of
see,
the day
I don't
today.
Love that. I mean, I like having a job. Don't get me wrong. The thing is, the video would be cool. Like getting fired like that would be cool. But then there's my life. You know, I'd have to deal with the fact that I was unemployed.
Yeah.
Don't love that part.
Some people make a profession out of it.
Well, maybe I could do that.
You just got to Google it.
You know, I'm a smart guy. I could probably figure out how to live on the government for the rest of my life. I think I'm going to do that.
In a strange turn of events on the Arnie Fry Show this afternoon. Ryan decided, screw this. I'm going to try to figure out how to live off the government. Which the Arnie Fry Show then reminded him was... the people.
I've been paying taxes for long enough. It's time I get all that back.
Yeah, I know. At some point, what if we just all throw in the towel?
Well, I think that's what leads to Venezuela.
Is that the goal?
Yeah. Yeah.
The economic collapse.
I'm pretty sure that
poverty.
That's...
if the
that's
government the has all this money, why don't they just hand it out to us evenly?
I kind of agree with that.
Uh-oh.
You know, they can print as much as they want. I never really thought about this.
Yeah.
They could just print money.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they print a bunch of extra money?
And then we could all have some.
So we all could have some, pay our mortgages easier, pay off our student loans, stuff like that.
We could just share the food.
We could probably, yeah. How about we go to a full barter system?
Okay. This is where my dad told me that I was a communist.
like
that's how this started.
The money that everybody makes... should be the same regardless of what you do.
And then everybody would be rich.
Everybody be rich. Everybody be equal, finally.
We should make the money that everybody gets a lot. You get a lot of money equally.
Yeah. Like if you think that making six figures is unattainable, you just wait till we get in charge.
Vote for Wiggins Fry.
Because we are going to implement...
communism.
No. I hate that word. That's
okay.
So gross.
Yeah, like, we should name it something else.
Community
like
economics.
Okay.
Democratic
communism.
Something.
We still need to get voted.
Democratic communism.
There you go, because you vote for it.
You only need one more than the other guys.
I just want to congratulate us for taking that all the way to the end of the segment.
Thank you. It was a short segment. Did Brett Baier conduct a fair interview? Yes or no? Let's have fun in the 2 o'clock hour. I'm tired of all this serious communism stuff. We'll be right back.